will ask me, are there any differences, are there any doctrinal differences in the Oakland Church and other churches of Christ? And the answer to that is that yes, there are some doctrinal differences. I normally tell them that there's about three or four major areas where we as a congregation do not follow the mainstream of thinking. And what I mean by that is if you're just going to go by churches that have Church of Christ on their sign, then most of them are not going to take the position that these elders and this church takes in regard to the things that we are talking about tonight. But our aim has never been to line up with other churches of Christ. Our desire is to line up with the Bible. You know, and if we line up with the Bible, then all local churches are going to be the same. The Apostle Paul mentioned on a couple of places that he had taught the same thing in every church. And so every church has a responsibility to study the Scriptures and to come to an understanding of what they say. And so we're going to talk tonight about the individual and the local church. Is there a difference in the individual and the local church? And does it make a difference whether there is a difference between the individual and the local church? I want to share three areas of concern with you tonight, and I want you to listen very closely to how I speak about these things. First of all, I want to talk about social concerns and recreation. We do not, as a local church, take funds from the treasury to be used for social meals and recreation. Yet, among many churches of Christ, that's one of their first concerns, is having a facility where you are going to provide both social meals and, for some, providing recreation for the members. It's one of the first things that's thought about sometimes in regard to a building project, and yet that was not true many, many years ago. So as a local church, we do not take funds from our treasury to be used for social meals or for recreation. But as individual Christians, you will find us quite often in each other's homes, enjoying each other's company, enjoying a fine meal together, and sometimes as individuals, you'll find us gathered somewhere for some kind of physical recreation. In the time that I've been here, there's been a number of occasions where guys and girls have gotten together and they've played volleyball or they've gone and played football or whatever, or mud volleyball or whatever the case may be. They are found together sometime engaging in recreation. They do that as individuals. Another area of concern would be what I refer to as general benevolence. And when I talk about general benevolence, I'm talking about reaching out to help people, whether it be in a monetary way or in some other way. As a local church, we will, as the need arises, take funds from our treasury to aid someone who is a needy saint. And this church has done that. There have been times where there have been saints who were in need, who were in need of food, who were in need of clothing, maybe who were in need of shelter. They could not meet those demands themselves because of a destitute situation, and the church here helped them because they were a needy saint. But we do not offer general benevolence to unbelievers from the church treasury. We don't take money from the church treasury to aid those in a benevolent way who are not Christians, who are not saints, who are not believers. But as individual Christians now, as individual Christians, day in and day out, our eyes are open to any and every opportunity that we may have to do good to someone who is in need. I know Jesus said not to noise your benevolence before men. That's not what I'm doing, but just the other day, I was talking to a man, got into a conversation with him, enjoyed my conversation with him. He was not a Christian, but he began to talk about having been laid off from work and how tight things had been and how difficult things were. He never asked me for a dime. He never made a plea. He was not trying in any way, to throw any hints toward me. But I reached in my pocket and I gave him some money so that he might be helped during this difficult time. I did that as an individual to someone who was not a New Testament Christian. There's a third area in the financial support of human institutions, as a local church, we will address our benevolent concerns under the oversight of our elders. Our elders realize that they have a responsibility to look after our members. And if they need any benevolent care, then our elders will do that under their oversight. Under their oversight. They can choose who to care for, how to care for them, how long they're going to be cared for. Every bit of that is under their oversight. We do not send funds to a board of directors of some human institution so that they might choose who to care for and how long to care for them, when it is to begin and when it is to end. If a child or an adult becomes needy in our midst and meets the qualifications of Scripture, then we will provide their needs. We will provide what they need under the oversight of our elders. But we do not send contributions to a separate organization to do what God gave the church to do. We also do not send contributions to colleges and universities. And so, there you go. There's our stand as a church. But now as individual Christians, we may send contributions to human institutions that are worthy of our support. What I want to ask you is, did you hear any recurring words that I was using as I was dealing with those things? Did you hear any words that were recurring? One of the things that you should have heard me saying throughout is I said, as individuals, but I also said, as a local church. I was making a distinction. I was making a distinction between what the individual can do and what the church can do. And the reason I do that is because when I read my Bible, everything that I believe on that hinges from the Bible, and I believe the Bible teaches that there is a difference. Listen to me. The Bible teaches that there is a difference between the individual and the local church. The Bible teaches that an individual may do only what is authorized for him to do, and a local church may do only what a local church is authorized to do. And I want to tell you, if that plank right there does not stand, then everything I just said falls apart. If the Bible does not make a distinction between the individual and the church, then everything I said just falls apart. But I believe we are on solid ground and that we can see that the Bible does indeed make a distinction between what the individual can do and what the local church can do. Now here's why that's important. Because sometimes there have been members of the church who kind of say, well, if the individual can do it, then the church can do it. Because what is the church? Well, the church is just a bunch of individuals. And so if individuals can do it, then why can't the church do it? Well, my answer to that would be, it's because there is a difference between the individual and the church. And all the lessons that we're going to look at over the next very few weeks all hinge upon this understanding. If you are a part of the Oakland Church of Christ, you need to know that this thinking permeates every decision that is made by these elders as to what they will do and what they will not do with the funds that come into the treasury of this local church. So does the Bible make a distinction? Can the church do everything the individual can do? That's what we're going to study tonight. To make it very clear, when I talk about individuals, I'm talking about Janice. I'm talking about Dwan. I'm talking about Kelly. I'm talking about Steve. That's what I mean by individuals. And we're going to talk about individuals, but we're also going to talk about the local church. And when I talk about the local church, I'm talking about all of us together as a collective unit, joining together to do what the church is told to do. That's what I mean by the local church. So let's begin to look at this as we talk about this Bible distinction. Turn to Acts chapter 11 and verse 26. And just very simply, I just want you to see that in the Bible, The Bible talks about Christians. It talks about Christians. In the Bible, you have Paul. Paul was a Christian. You have Dorcas, who was a Christian. Peter was a Christian. But here's this. Paul was not a church. And Dorcas was not a church. And Peter was not a church. I think all of us can understand that, can't we? That Paul is an individual. He's not a church. So there's a distinction there to be made. In Acts 11 and verse 26, it says that Barnabas departed to Tarsus to seek Saul, and when he had found him, he brought him to Antioch. And so it was that for a whole year, they assembled with the church. See there? You've got them all together, coming together as a church to do what a church does under the headship of Jesus Christ. They assembled with the church and taught a great many people. And then it says the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. That verse talks about two things. It talks about Christians. And it talks about the church. And so that verse makes a distinction between those two. Very simply, a Christian is never called a church, and a church is never called a Christian. There is a difference in those two things. Suppose somebody was asking about the faithfulness of Carl Alexander, and they said, "Can I ask you a question, Jeff? Is Carl a faithful church?" And I would have gone, "You know, what did you say? Did you ask if Carl was a faithful church? That don't make any sense. We all understand that." Or what if somebody wanted to know how the church at Oakland was doing, and they ask, "Well, let me ask you this. I want to ask a question about Oakland. How's the Christian doing?" That don't make any sense. What do you mean, well, how's the Christian doing? I thought you were going to ask me about the church. So I think all of us can see this very simple distinction here between the Christian and the church. Now let me say this. When I read my Bible, I only see two types of commands in the Bible. One of those commands is commanded to the local church as a collective unit. The other commands are commanded to us as individuals. And we have got to read our Bibles to see, is that talking about what I as an individual am to do? Or is that talking about what the church is to do? We have to see who is being addressed in each of these situations. Now I will say that when I read my Bible, I am persuaded that the collective responsibilities that we have are very small. There are not many instructions given in the Bible for what the church as a collectivity does. The vast majority of the Bible is talking about what Jeff May is to do day in and day out. Most of the commands in there are for individuals. But there are a few instances where the church is being addressed, and we're talking about what the church is to do. And so we have to make that distinction. Now, let me give you a passage to me that is very plain along these lines. Turn to Matthew 18 and verse 15. Matthew 18 and verse 15. And by the way, if you are trying in this series to learn, how can I talk to people about these things? What verses do I need to know to help people to see these things? This is one of them. So right off, you need to tell yourself, I need to get acquainted with Matthew 18 because it's going to teach the difference between an individual and the church. Matthew 18, beginning in verse 15. Jesus said, "Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear you, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, then tell it to the church. And if he refuses even to hear the church, then let him be to you as a heathen and a tax collector." All right, so look at the screen here and notice that what you have here is you have a situation where a brother has sinned against another brother. And he says that if your brother has sinned against you, you need to go to him. So who's to go? Who did God say is to go first? God says that if Elton has done me wrong, then I am to go to Elton. Just me and Elton. We keep it on a small level. It's just me and Elton. And I say, brother, I need to talk to you. You've done me wrong. I want to tell you why I believe that. And I'm asking you to harmonize things with me and bring things back together with me. I go to Elton. So first the offended brother goes. But suppose I go to Elton and Elton will not hear me. He just won't listen. He says, I haven't done anything wrong and I'm not going to make anything right. And I say, okay, I'll be back. And so I go now and I get one or two more to go with me. Why? Because I need somebody there who, as I talk to Elton again, can serve as witnesses to the conversation that takes place. Now, they also, obviously, upon hearing the information, as they come to know more about it, then if I'm right about this, and they also will be working to talk with Elton and help him to work this thing out with me. Now, by the way, me and Elton get along great. We don't have any problems. But I'm using names to help you to see what I mean here. So, first of all, the offended brother goes. And then one or two more go. And he won't listen to me. He won't listen to me and one or two more. What does God say to do now? God says now, he says at last, you tell it to the church. You tell it to the church. And so, I bring it to the attention of the church. Now, in the fact that because we have elders, I would bring it to the attention of our leadership. And then the leadership would involve the whole church. That we're trying to get Elton to repent here. We're trying to get him to do the right thing. And the whole church now joins in trying to get him to work things out with his brother. And then if he won't hear the church, then God says we then take disciplinary action. We let him be to us as a heathen and a tax collector. We would not have social interaction with him any longer. We would not eat with him. We would not do anything that would show approval to him. We're calling upon him to make things right. So, but here's the point I'm wanting to make. Can you see that we have an individual going? And then we have one or two more individuals going. And then last of all, God says, tell it to the church. But here's the point that I want to make. If either of these is the church, then the church acted before God wanted it to. Can you see that? If I'm a church, then you've already got the church involved. When I went to Elton, we already had the church involved. Who believes that? Do y'all believe I'm a church? And if I take two or three more with me, do you believe that's a church? If it is, then the whole passage doesn't even make sense because God's saying, go tell it to the church, and yet we've got three or four, and that's the church already. No, that's not the church already. The church as a collectivity does not hear about it until the last. And so here's a passage that shows an individual, three or four individuals, but at last the church, the local church is told and gets involved. I think we can see that. Can you see that? Can y'all see that? To me, that verse is so plain that there is a difference between the individual and the church. Now go to Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5 and verse 4. Do you remember this story? Ananias and Sapphira had evidently seen how Barnabas gave money to help Christians who were in need. And of course, he got a lot of praise for that. The apostles even called him the son of encouragement. And so it says in verse 1, but a certain man named Ananias with Sapphira his wife sold a possession. But they kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? Listen carefully to verse 4 as Peter discusses the money of Ananias and Sapphira. While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men and to God. All right, so Ananias and Sapphira have some land. I know Eugene and Wade and maybe some others of you, Ronnie perhaps, oftentimes buy land, sell land, buy property, sell property. You have a right to do that. You have a right to do that. If you make money from the sale of the land, you have a right to decide how much of that you're going to put into the treasury. Nobody tells you what you have to do in regard to that. That's a free will offering. It's your money. Did Ananias and Sapphira have to give it all? No, they didn't have to give it all. But they had control of it. And that's the point that Peter makes, that while that money remained, was it not your own? It was yours. You could have done whatever you wanted to with it. You didn't have to give it all. But the thing he's getting on them about is that you said that this was everything that you got from the sale of the land. You were trying to make yourself look bigger than you really were. You lied. But that's not the point I'm really dealing with here. The point I'm dealing with is that when your money... Now, I realize there's a sense in which all of it comes from God, of course. But still, Peter said it was your own. When your money is in your pocket, it is yours. It is yours. But when you give your money into the church treasury, it is no longer yours. I think most of us understand that. That when I give on Sunday morning and put my money into the treasury, it is no longer mine. It now falls under the Lord's authority as the head of the church. And He has delegated to these elders the right to make decisions as to what will be done with the money, but always answering to the Lord, making sure that they do only what the Lord authorizes with the money that we put into the church treasury. So I just ask you, can you see that when your money is in your pocket, it's yours as an individual? I don't tell Wade what he can buy and not buy. I don't tell Eugene what he can buy and not buy. I don't tell them what to give to the church when they buy and sell property. That's theirs. They make that decision. It's theirs. But when it goes in here, it leaves their authority. And it comes under the authority of the Lord and the elders who are delegated by Him to guide this local church. Let me just quickly show you that the Bible does show a difference between these two. There's a difference in the individual and the local church on how you raise the money. I think all of you know that you get your money by honest labor. If any man, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor with his hands, that he may have to give to one who is in need. You get your money by honest labor. How does the church get it? Well, there's a difference. There's a difference in how the church does it. So there's a difference here. The church gets it by voluntary offering. In 1 Corinthians 16, as I've given order to the church of Galatia, so you must also do on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by in store. So the church gets it, it's not by honest labor, but it gets it by the voluntary offering of those who have labored. So can you see that the method of raising the money is different for the individual and the church? Furthermore, we can see a difference in the oversight. We just saw that you oversee your money. The local elders will oversee the money that is given to the local church. So there is a difference in the oversight of the money. And last of all, there's a difference in the use. I use my money to give a contribution. I pay taxes. I provide for my family. I maintain good works. I try to use money to do good deeds for other people, to try to help those who are in need. But then when it comes to the church, you have these three things. In the Bible, I see only three things the church ever used its money for. One was to preach the gospel. Another was to relieve needy saints. Both of those words are important. Needy saints. And last of all, to edify saints, to build Christians up by preaching and teaching. This is where you have the authority for the church here to buy teaching materials so that the church can be taught. So we preach the gospel, relieve needy saints, and edify saints. There's a difference in these two things, and I think that most of us should be able to see that. Turn to 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16 now. Here's another one that to me is very clear, very clear. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16. All right, this is true to life. You know, you may have a situation like this in your family, you know, pretty soon. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. All right, so more than likely the time is coming when your mom or dad may lose their spouse. And because of that, they need help. They need help. Whose responsibility is it? Well, to start with, it's yours. The passage said, if any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. So can you see who God gave that responsibility to first? If my mama, as a widow one day, sorry about that, Dad. If my mom, as a widow one day, needs some help, then it's my responsibility to help her. I have first responsibility. Now, why did God give it to me? Well, the reason He gave it to me is because He does not want the church to be burdened with it. Now, while the church can help those who are widows in need, God still doesn't want the church to be strapped with that. So He's looking for a way for the church not to have to do it. He's looking for a way for the resources of the church not to be strained. So therefore, He says, you do it. Can you see? Can you see that there is a difference right here? This man is not the church. This woman is not the church. And the reason they are doing what they are doing is so that the church won't be burdened. Let me say this slow. If they are the church, then isn't it already burdened? If that man or woman is the church, then you've got the church burdened to start with. But the point is, they're not the church. That's just a man or a woman. As an individual helping their family member, and if they can't do it, if they cannot offer any help, don't have the means to help, I believe the Bible teaches in this passage that the church can do it. The church can do it. But He's trying to do it this way with individuals so that the church is not burdened. Can you see that? Can y'all see the difference there between the individual and the church? I think most of us certainly should be able to see that. All right, so those are the passages then that to me clearly show the distinction between the individual and the church. Now let me give you just a few simple observations, and this lesson will be yours. First of all, let me talk about my home. My home is my responsibility as an individual. I have the responsibility to provide food, clothing, and shelter, and even recreation. I think that's a good thing. And I've tried to do some things to provide recreation for my family so that we can kind of loosen up and breathe some fresh air and let our hair down for a while and restore our souls. I think that's fine. And I certainly can do that. But you cannot shift that responsibility to the church. The church does not have a responsibility to provide food for your family, clothing for your family, shelter for your family, or recreation for your family. The church doesn't have that responsibility. That's your responsibility. Turn to 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, the Bible says, if anyone does not provide for his own, he has denied the faith, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith, and he's worse than an unbeliever. All right, so I've got a responsibility to provide for my own. The church does not have that responsibility. But now, in cases where I can't provide food or clothing or shelter for my family, then the church certainly can. Turn to Romans 15. Romans 15. Now, I realize there's a little difference in using me as an example there because I preach the gospel and I'm supported to preach the gospel. So in that sense, the church does have authority to support a local evangelist. But as far as an ordinary home, the church doesn't provide those things to you. You do that. But in cases where you cannot do that, the church has the right to help. In Romans 15, verse 25, Paul says, I am now going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. For it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. And so we have churches in the New Testament taking from their treasury to help needy saints. So yes, if there was a situation in this church where somebody could not provide those things for their family, because of destitute situation, the church certainly can do that. All right, let me give you another observation that shows, I think, another distinction here. In the epistles that are written to the church as a whole, like for you, when you read the book of Ephesians, that's written to the church as a whole. But you will find that there are sometimes in those letters things that are said just to individual Christians. For example, both at Corinth and at Ephesus, the husbands were taught to love their wives. So you're reading this letter written to the whole church, but there's some commands in there to individuals, and the husbands are taught to love their wives. You better not love mine in the way God is commanding me to love mine. That's my responsibility. It's not the church's responsibility. And so I have that responsibility to love my wife emotionally and physically. In Genesis chapter 26 and verse 8, turn there please. Genesis 26 and verse 8. In Genesis 26 and verse 8, you remember Isaac and Rebekah? Rebekah was a beautiful bride to Isaac. And they came into Philistine territory. And it says in Genesis 26 and verse 8 that it came to pass when he had been there a long time that Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, looked through a window and he saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. I think the King James says sporting. I think it does sporting with his wife. It carries the idea of caresses. And so basically the idea here is that Abimelech looks out his window and Isaac has told him that Rebekah is his sister. And he looks out there and he sees this man doing some things that you ought not do with your sister. And so he says, quite obviously she is your wife. She's your wife. He knew from what he was seeing that's the man's wife. So that was fine. Isaac had that responsibility to Rebekah. I have that responsibility to my wife. You have that responsibility to your wife. The church doesn't have responsibility to do that. And again, every man in here would be upset if everybody in the church thought they had a responsibility to show endearment to his wife. No, that's an individual. We can see that, can't we? All right. Now here's one I want you to listen real close to, because a lot of people fail to see this. And some people even think that it's kind of ridiculous. But I don't think so one minute. Suppose that Eugene and Ronnie and Mark Ham decided that they were going to join together and buy a bunch of cows. And they're going to call it Triple S Cattle Farm. Because there's three saints. Ronnie's a saint, Eugene's a saint, and John Mark's a saint. And so they just decide, we'll call this Triple S Cattle Farm. So they buy these cows. They start operating this cattle farm. Would people in the community say, have you heard what the Oakland Church of Christ is doing? It's operating a cattle farm. Nobody would do that. Nobody would say the Oakland Church is operating a cattle farm, because they know that Ronnie, Eugene, and John Mark are not the Oakland Church. It's not the Oakland Church. That's Eugene and Ronnie and Mark. Let me give you another one. I believe that I can endorse and financially support a political candidate. I believe I can do that. I believe I can give money to support a political candidate if I want to from my money. But where's the authority for the Oakland Church of Christ to do that? Where's the authority? Where in the Bible do you see anywhere where the church ever took money from its treasury to support somebody for a government position? It's just not there. They didn't do it. It was not a part of the work of the church. But let me ask you this. Suppose that four or five of us here got together and we met uptown and we set up headquarters for somebody to be president of the United States. We're campaigning for this person to be president of the United States in Athens, Alabama here. Would people say, have you heard what the Oakland Church of Christ is doing? They are supporting so-and-so for president. That's not the church. That's not the Oakland Church. That's just four or five of us individuals here who have decided that we're going to do that. Turn to 1 Corinthians 11 and 8 and verse 18, and I want you to make sure that you hear what I'm about to say here. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 18. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 18. Paul says, speaking to the church at Corinth, he says, "For first of all, when you come together as a church," I hear that there are divisions among you, and in part I believe it. Folks, we come together as a church to do what the church does. And I think that passage shows that here they were, these people were off out here, but then on the first day of the week, they came together as a church to do what? To do what the church does. All right, now let me ask you this question. I want to see if you can fine-tune this the way I believe the Bible does. Suppose every single member of this church heard about a meeting uptown to support a certain guy for president, and every single member of this church was found up there, and every single member of this church said, "Count us in." And every single member of this church is taking money from their pocket to support that campaign. Is that the Oakland Church of Christ doing that as a work of the church? No. Can you see that? The purpose is totally different. The resources are totally different. It's not coming out of the Lord's treasury. It's coming out of our pockets. It's totally different, even though it is the same bunch of people that are up there. There's a difference in what we come together as a church to do and what we may come together at other places to do. Now, the reason that's important, let me just tell you why that's important. Because sometimes people will say, "Well, look, if we can all go to the popular place, if we can all go to the popular place and have a gathering and have food, then why can't we just build a facility here and do it?" And some people, that just kind of seems silly. You know, you're going to go over there and do it, but you won't build a facility here to do it. That's not silly. That's not silly at all. It is just simply recognizing that what we do over there at the popular place, we do as individuals. There's an invitation extended by some Christians here. They say, "We'd like for anybody that wants to come." The invitation is extended by individuals. The place is paid for by individuals. It doesn't come out of the church's treasury. It comes out of the pocket of individuals. It's not something we do as a work of the church. It's something we do as an adjunct of our home. When I invite you to my home, that's coming from me. If I rent the popular place and invite you to come there, that's coming from me. We don't do it as the work of the church. Somebody said, "Well, that just seems like I just don't know. Well, yeah, if you'll look at your Bible, you'll see there's a difference. There's a difference between what the individuals do, and there's a difference with what the church does. And so, you will not see us take money from this treasury to build a facility to do anything that God never gave the church the responsibility to do. One more quick point on these simple observations. In an effort to do good unto all men, I may decide that I will support the Boy Scouts. Now, of course, in view of some recent decisions by the Boy Scouts, I may choose somewhere else. But the point is, if I want to support some group out there, I can. If I want to send money to Special Olympics, I can. If I want to send money to Clements High School, I can. In fact, the kids here quite often from the schools ask us if we'll support a fundraiser. I can. But where's the authority for the church to take money from its treasury to give to the Boy Scouts, to give to Special Olympics, or to give to one of the high schools? Where is it? It's just not there. And so we see that distinction. I just simply ask you, can you see the difference between the individual and the local church? And I'll leave this last point to you. If there is no difference, if there is no difference in the individual and the local church, then everything that you may do as a Christian, the church can also do. Do y'all believe that? Do y'all believe the church can do everything that you can do? I don't believe that. I don't believe that for one minute. The Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible just does not teach that. And so we see a distinction between the individual and the church. Now in the remaining lessons, we're going to talk about what the Oakland church does with this and this and this and this. But it was important for you to understand the difference between the two. And having understood that, we can study some other things in a good way. And it's very important. It's very, very important that these lessons be heard. Because there's been serious problems that have come up in the body of Christ in years gone by because of these kinds of things. And if we're not taught today, it can cause problems again. And so we just want to stay focused on what God gave. The reason we enjoy good things here at Oakland is because our focus is good. I think it is. Our focus is good. We're not distracted with things that God never gave the church to do. The lesson is yours. If you need to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ tonight, we're going to sing a good song that really helps us to think about that response and the need to give our lives to God. If you would, come while we stand.